say, I'm Chris from Corporate Watch. Corporate Watch is a workers' co-op. We're based in London now. And then since 1996, it's been doing research work on corporations. Since last year, we've had a research project on companies profiting from the occupation and from Israeli apartheid in Palestine. And the context of that really is, I'm not going to go too much into detail about what's happening in Palestine, because I guess people are quite clear up. Maybe I'll ask what you want to know a little bit later, but there's been an occupation of the West Bank and the Syrian Golan since 1967. Gaza's under siege. 1,400 people were killed last January. It's patrolled by air and sea, by Israeli drones and manned and unmanned boats patrolling the Gaza sea border, harassing fishermen, harassing farmers on the land borders of Gaza. The population's being systematically starved, really, by the Israeli siege. Israel killed over 1,000 people again in Lebanon in 2006, and repeatedly gets away with these massive massacres of people. And the response to that from Palestinians and from residents of the Golan as well in 2005 was to make a new call for a movement for boycott, divestment and sanctions against apartheid Israel. And by the way, this word apartheid, the other part of the story is, as well as Israel's occupation, Israel's non-Jewish citizens live under a system of systematic racial discrimination and deprivation of services, deprivation of freedoms, and the right to live where they want, the right to land, etc. And in 2005, there was a call after the International Court of Justice's ruling in The Hague that Israel's apartheid wall in the West Bank was illegal. There was a call from hundreds of civil society organisations, trade unions, non-governmental organisations, resistance groups and political parties for an international movement for boycott, divestment and sanctions. Boycott from Israeli companies, boycott of Israeli goods, boycott of goods from Israel settlements, divestment of money from Israeli companies and from the Israeli state. A cultural boycott, an academic boycott of institutions and artists who took money from Israeli state institutions, and to campaign for state sanctions against Israel. Military embargoes and other state sanctions, and to campaign against state agreements which benefit the state of Israel. And it's really in the context of that that we're trying to do research and to support the growing movement for BDS, boycott, divestment and sanctions against apartheid Israel. And it should be said that there's been a lot of successes in the BDS movement in the last years. I mean, I've been going out to Palestine for about 10 years actually, and particularly been connected to researching around agriculture for probably the last 4 years, and going out to the West Bank, to areas where agricultural exports are going from Israel settlements. The international boycott movement is having an effect. If you speak to employers of workers who are working on the settlements, we interview Palestinian middlemen, etc. They are men, actually. So middlemen, and they told us that they're not employing so many people. The settlements aren't exporting a lot of produce to Western Europe anymore. They're exporting to Russia and places like that, but to countries, especially Britain, but also places like France, Italy, agricultural exports have really, really dropped. That's not the only successful campaign. Campaigns against companies like Veolia, that's probably the most successful campaign internationally, in terms of a coordinated international campaign against a company complicit in Israeli apartheid. Veolia are a company who are involved in the CityPass consortium, which is a consortium of companies that's building a tram line in occupied East Jerusalem, linking the old city of East Jerusalem to settlements like Pisgat Zev and the French Hill settlement in Jerusalem, sort of leading out towards Ramallah. And they're also involved in picking up rubbish from Israel's illegal settlements inside the West Bank, and operating bus services going to the settlements. This is it. I mean, Veolia are a company who have government and council contracts all over. I mean, Europe, Australia, America, India, places, you know, they make their money out of big government contracts. They may well do the bins in Sheffield, is that right? They also do recycling. Down in Brighton, where I live, they're trying to run a waste incinerator. So huge government contracts, and there's been a campaign sort of under the banner of Derail Veolia, where groups across Europe and also in Australia have been campaigning to stop them from getting new contracts with local councils. And reportedly, because of campaigns that have scuppered their attempts to get tenders for council contracts, they've been cost millions of pounds. And they've attempted to pull out of this CityPass consortium, which is a multi-million pound project, because of the damage it's done to their reputation. It's really been quite huge. Also, divestment campaigns against companies like Elbit, who are an Israeli arms and security company. Pension funds, the Norwegian state pension fund, for instance, have divested from Elbit. And then you have a Palestinian Authority, quite hypocritical in some ways. Maybe we can come back to that. But a Palestinian Authority backed Palestinian boycott of settlements, working on the settlements and settlement goods, which is actually having a real impact in the West Bank right now. Reportedly, 17 factories in the West Bank have shut down within the last year. 17 settlement factories, because workers aren't going to work there and they can't sell their goods to the Palestinian population living under occupation. So the BDS movement is really having an economic impact and an impact on the economy of the occupation. But before I kind of go more into talking about that, I just wanted to know what people wanted to get out of the workshop, and if you're involved in, if you want to say, don't say if you don't, but if you're involved in any campaigning which is around issues to do with Palestine, what sort of thing you wanted to know, because it's an issue where I could, you know, you could talk for hours and hours about some aspects of the what's going on, and it'd be good to know specifically what people want to know, if you just want to hear generally.
I'm interested in, not buying Israeli goods, which is what we're doing, buying Israeli product. How do the, what are these actions against Veolia? Yeah. Council contracts, what do you think we'll be doing to sort of stop that?
It'd be good to know some sort of information about that, because you generally sort of get lists of companies that you can sort of actively boycott Israeli goods by not buying from them or something, but maybe some more information about
them. People are in the recycling bin to have a choice. I mean, what do you have to do? How have they got a bad name, like you say?
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about you guys?
Just what
you wanted to get out of the workshop and what would be good to know?
Nothing particular. I mean, I guess kind of just bits and pieces of information. We're going to the International Solidarity Movement training in June, so just running into that, just kind of like going to being as much and going to as many discussions as possible about the Palestine issue.
Mine just kind of came along to hear and learn. It would be nice to kind of, because I knew about the partition wall that they built, and I thought that was what was meant by Israeli apartheid, but I don't know enough about how non-Jews are treated in the state of Israel, so that would be nice to know a few details of that.
Came to record it. I don't know if it's worth. I'm kind of vaguely involved with the Sheffield Palestine Solidarity Campaign.
We've been to a lot of demonstrations.
Right. I mean, and then they have done some stuff around Veolia, but I can't remember exactly what. But I think there's some stuff on their website. And what they're doing at the moment, and they might actually be going on today. I can't remember. But they've been, in Sheffield, they've been doing regular kind of supermarket actions that people can get involved with, and. Their website's not updated that regularly, but you can get in contact. What they do is, if you get onto their email list, they do regularly send out emails about all their upcoming events. And that's, if you want to know what's kind of going on in Sheffield, that's like the email list to get onto. And it's sheffieldpcs.org.uk is their website. PSC, sorry, yeah. I reckon it's spelling.
Okay.
Also, what we've been talking about before, I've not heard the word apartheid so often.
Right.
In Israel, is that something that's, I don't know, is apartheid? You're not hearing it in the sort of mainstream press at all, the word apartheid.
Jimmy Carter used it in the title of his book about a year ago, and that caused a big row. I mean, that's what brought it into the mainstream discourse.
Yeah. Well, to talk about that for a moment then. I mean, when you say the word apartheid, it conjures up visions of South Africa, and the situation in Israel and the West Bank does have some, you know, parallels with South Africa. But if you think of apartheid as a systematic system of racial discrimination benefiting one people within a state, I think that does fit the situation in Israel. To give a few examples, I don't know if you want to come closer. Israel calls itself a democratic state, but there are lots of exceptions to that democracy. For instance, the residents of the occupied Syrian Golan, the people who live in the area which Israel military occupied in 1967, drove out the majority of the original residents and left a minority to really to form a buffer zone between Syria and Israel, and that area has been annexed, or the Israelis have attempted to annex that area and attempted to normalise it into the state of Israel, and they've set up a collaborator administration in the Syrian Golan, which isn't elected. There's never been elections, and simply negotiates with the Israeli state for the administration of that area. Similarly, in the Nakab or the Negev, the area, south of Tel Aviv, I guess. the indigenous Bedouin residents of that area are subjected to house demolitions. A majority of people live in unrecognised villages in that area, and these are Israeli citizens, citizens of the State of Israel, who are not Jewish, and the Jewish municipalities in the Nakab or the Negev are given electricity, water, etc., and given the right to expand, given the right to set up industrial areas and build factories, etc. The recognised Bedouin municipalities, Bedouin areas, are starved of resources, have to fight the state every step of the way to get rights to develop or expand their municipalities. And the state refuses to recognise a majority of places where Bedouin live. So there are unrecognised villages, and those unrecognised villages, all of the houses within those unrecognised villages are subject to house demolition orders. And periodically the Israeli land authority will carry out demolitions in that area. Also, Israeli companies like the Israeli Electric Company, Mekarot, the water company, and Bezek, and other telephone companies, don't connect them to basic services. So these people who the state has defined as citizens who don't deserve to have these services are denied access to services. They're denied the right to vote in a local election because they don't have a municipality. And they're citizens of the State of Israel with different rights to the Jewish population of the State of Israel. Even in some of the recognised municipalities in the Negev, the municipalities aren't elected. They're nominated by the Israeli state. So again, there's a lack of democracy there. A large amount of land in Israel is land is administrated by the Israeli Lands Authority, and the Jewish National Fund has been given a quasi-state, a quasi-government status to administer land in Israel. And lands administered by the Jewish National Fund are reserved for Jewish use only. A great percentage of land is barred for development by non-Jewish people. Again, if you haven't served in the army in the State of Israel, that leads to inequality in terms of getting jobs, in terms of getting benefits in the future. People who've been to the army get money to go to university, etc. Once they leave. Palestinian residents of Israel are denied that.
You said something about the roads. Do these non-Jewish citizens of Israel have the right to use all the roads?
In Israel, they do. Yeah, there is discriminatory. I've been talking about in Israel, in 1948 Israel, not in the occupied territories. So these are Israeli citizens, not occupied Palestinian, not residents of occupied Palestine. However, development projects are also often planned in a discriminatory way. Road building projects, other development projects are planned to be in areas where non-Jewish people are living, and to take away the land from those people through expropriation for road building, etc. And an example of that is there's currently an extension planned through the Nakab of of a major road called Route 6, which again will take land away from the Bedouin population for a road that's going to benefit primarily the Jewish municipalities. Inside the West Bank, again, the situation is different. These people are living under occupation, living in ghettos, really, which have been established since the Oslo peace process. The Oslo peace process established areas A, B and C. Area A is Palestinian areas, B is a... It's supposed to be joint Israeli-Palestinian control, but actually isn't. And C is Israeli control. Area A areas are typically very crowded because people from the countryside have been pushed into urban areas because of the Israeli encroachment of land in the countryside. Area C are areas which are. Often under threat from settlement expansion, from having their lands expropriated for the building of the apartheid wall, and are often dominated by the military, etc. And there are roads. The system of roads in the West Bank is designed to support the settlements. There are roads within the West Bank which are segregated. For instance, some of the roads that Veolia's buses drive on. So again, there's a different system of apartheid within the West Bank.
So for those roads, are they open just to Israeli citizens, or do you have to be Jewish to use them? So I've heard some people describe them as Jewish-only roads. Is that accurate?
The road... road 443, I think it is... might be 446. I think it's 443. Is barred for Palestinians, and that's for people with Palestinian plates in the cars. And that's been since the Intifada. Israel said for security reasons that road is barred for people with Palestinian plates. As an example, cars with Palestinian plates. Obviously have much more problems at checkpoints, etc. So
I used to do years ago I lived in Tel Aviv for a bit, and I used to do like just labour and odd jobs and that, and the Israelis got paid like loads of money, it's got like 25 shekels an hour or something, and like all the Europeans sat on that, we got 12, and then the Palestinians got 10 or something.
Not that was official, but still, so that's what I mean, I guess, by using the term apartheid to describe what happens in Israel as well as what happens in the West Bank. The reason, a lot of our research, I don't know if people have read what Corporal Watch has been writing, most of it is on, well, all of it in fact is on a website called corporateoccupation.wordpress.com, and also on the Corporal Watch site, corporalwatch.org. And a lot of our research has focused on the Israeli settlements, Israel settlements on Palestinian and other occupied land. And that's because, and also the occupation industries. So the occupation, by the occupation industries, I mean the industries that are building the roads within the West Bank, building the settlements, the construction companies building the settlements, the security companies providing CCTV and security technology for the checkpoints and the apartheid wall, the companies building the apartheid wall, the manufacturers working inside the Israeli industrial zones, employing Palestinian workers, paid under the Israeli minimum wage, the agricultural companies who profit from farming on land which has been expropriated from the Palestinians inside the West Bank. That's what I guess I mean by the occupation economy. And I guess the rationale for targeting the occupation economy, probably two reasons for targeting that those industries. One would be that the economy of Israel is bound to the occupation economy. They're the same companies that are working inside Israel, and to target the occupation economy is really to target the economy of Israel, and should be a goal for the BDS movement. Also, with those industries, in campaigning there's often legal avenues that can be exploited. It's illegal to build. It's illegal to build settlements. It's illegal to build roads on occupied territory. It's illegal to operate businesses out of the settlements. It's illegal. Settlements in the West Bank are illegal. So there are avenues in campaigning where we can make progress. And for instance, I think that's happened with the supermarkets in the UK. You were talking about supermarket demos earlier. I mean, those demos in the UK have been going on for 10 years, really, but they've become a lot stronger since the invasion of Gaza. People have been taking action across the UK in a more concerted way. And I've been involved in talking to supermarkets on a few occasions, and have tried to monitor what the supermarkets are doing about settlement goods, because supermarkets are worried about selling settlement goods. Goods from the settlements come from companies who are operating in occupied territory. The British government's policy is that the settlements are illegal. So there are obvious avenues for campaigning around settlement goods, not because we think that there shouldn't be a boycott of all Israeli goods, but because strategically that's where we can make progress. And for instance, the Co-op has taken an ethical stance and said that they won't sell settlement goods any longer. Marks and Spencers have also said that they are no longer doing that. Whether it's true or not, I don't know, but and they haven't taken an ethical stance. They've just said that because of safety issues, actually, that they're not selling settlement goods anymore. Sainsbury's are saying they don't sell any goods from the settlements, but it's nothing to do with campaigning or anything like that, or ethics. It's because of quality of the goods. That's why they've stopped. But there has been a movement towards large stores stopping buying goods from the settlements, and like I said before, that is apparent when you go to places like the Jordan Valley, which is where a majority of the goods from the West Bank come from. And the Jordan Valley is it's the eastern backbone of the West Bank, the border with Jordan along the Jordan River, and it's become apparent that the settlements there are being economically damaged by the BDS campaign. To talk a little bit in more detail about the settlement industry, to talk about agricultural companies, first of all, the biggest of those agricultural companies is Carmel Agretzko, which is partially owned by the Israeli state, partially owned by a cooperative of settlers themselves, and partially owned by investment companies, including a company called Apex Partners, who are based in London. And they have packing houses for fruit and vegetables in the majority of settlements, certainly the majority of settlements in the Jordan Valley. There's also smaller cooperatives like, which are listed here, Mahadran to Newport, who supply Tesco, and Haddy Clem, who supply Marks and Spencers, although Marks and Spencers say that the goods they get are no longer from settlements. And targeting those companies has been relatively successful, I would say. There's been a direct action campaign against Carmel Agretzko in London. You may have heard about it. People have, for about 6 years now, been going to their depot in London and locking themselves to the gates and blocking the vans coming in and out of the depot, causing significant disruption to that depot. There's also campaigns springing up around Europe against Carmela Gretzko. There are campaigns in Italy and in France now, which are gathering momentum because Carmela Gretzko has ports in which they bring in goods by sea in both Italy and France. The manufacturing industry on the settlements, a lot of that, or the majority of that, takes place in settlement industrial zones, like the Barkan industrial zone close to the settlement of Ariel, and the Mishor Adamim industrial zone close to the settlement of Mali Adamim. Again, the boycott movement has been having some success. For instance, a European campaign against Multilock, who are operating out of the Barkan industrial zone, has caused them to say that they're moving out of the Barkan industrial zone. And some of the companies operating out of those industrial zones are Soda Club, who have an office in Peterborough, and a very large mattress company called Sealy, who... an American, Canadian, I think, a mattress company who have offices across the UK. And all of these companies, especially companies which are international companies that have branches in the settlements, are vulnerable. It won't take much. Won't take more than a few demonstrations and pickets across Europe for them to start thinking, well, maybe we should be pulling our offices out of the settlements. And that is a big deal if they begin to do that. Like I say, there's already 17 factories that have closed down this year in the industrial zones. So these really are companies which are ripe for targeting by the BDS campaign. Another company called Ahava, which means love, I think, in Hebrew, cosmetics company who have a factory in it's not an industrial zone actually, it's in a settlement called Mitzpah Shalem on the Dead Sea. Again, there's a large campaign against them in London. Their goods are sold by John Lewis and in other shops around the country, so they're another company who are ripe for pressure from the BDS movement.
Can I just ask what the owner of these factories is? It not mostly Palestinian workers, or do they not suffer when these companies buy out?
So I could talk about workers. I've interviewed over the years mainly agricultural workers in the Jordan Valley. Agricultural workers come from around the West Bank, and if you go to the checkpoint, El Hamra checkpoint, entering the Jordan Valley at 3 o'clock in the morning, you can see hundreds of workers pouring through the checkpoint to go and work on the settlements and around on the settlements' land in the Jordan Valley. I've really never found a worker. Quite honestly, who said to me, don't campaign against these companies. These are the companies that are taking their land. And they're being paid, in the Jordan Valley, on average, 70 shekels a day when the Israeli minimum wage, which Palestinians are in the West Bank are entitled to, is around 160 shekels a day. There's child labour, widespread child labour on settlements in the West Bank. There's unsafe agricultural practices, for instance, people picking dates in the date palms are hoisted up into the trees with a cherry picker and then left there in the branches to pick the dates. That's something which happens a lot in the Jordan Valley. People who have accidents at work aren't taken to hospital by their employers. They have to get a taxi out of the valley to a Palestinian hospital. All these stories are stories that you hear repeated, you hear repeated all the time that there needs to be an international movement against companies, against the agricultural companies that they work for. and you hear repeated all the time, I don't care if I lose my job. In terms of the workers in the industrial zones, I haven't spoken to so many of the workers in the industrial zones. Like I was saying, in the last few months, the Palestinian Authority has launched a huge campaign, actually, particularly against the settlement industrial zones. And I think that campaign has a degree of popular support. And again, I've not heard workers say to me, don't campaign against these companies. What I've heard said is that the light at the end of the tunnel for us is international solidarity and the BDS movement. And you really do get that feeling now that Palestinians are beginning to really have hopes for the international movement. So yes, they are. It's Palestinian workers working there. The bosses are settlers or Israelis. The workers are Palestinian. Palestinian workers will lose their jobs, but the primary problem for Palestinians living under occupation is the occupation, is the land being stolen by the settlements, is the apartheid system. So they're calling for boycott. A word about Veolia. You're asking about Veolia. Yeah, there are campaigns, local campaigns, against this company around the country. If you look at the Big Campaign website, www.bigcampaign.org, there's a section about Veolia that's got some suggestions. You can do an FOI request quite easily to your local council if you don't know who the contractors, whether Veolia have contracts with your local council. They very often publish it anyway, but that's the kind of FOI request that is likely to be granted. You're asking who does the recycling, who do you contract Veolia for anything, because actually they do quite a number of things for the local council. The problem with Veolia is they often get contracts for ridiculous amounts of time, 25 years sometimes they get a contract with the local council, and then the local council can't pull out of that contract without breaching without being liable to be asked for money by Veolia. If you see that Veolia are tendering for a contract, are set to tender for a contract, there are lots of things you can do. I mean, there's information and model letters and etc. to on the Big Campaign website to try and persuade the council to exclude Veolia from tendering. But just a local campaign against their tender has been successful in a number of places at stopping them from getting these contracts. And if you imagine the size of doing the recycling or doing the rubbish for Sheffield for 5 years, it's an amazing amount of money. And they really are they really are one of the international companies with the biggest commitments in Palestine and the biggest the biggest contracts with the Israeli government for buses, waste, etc. So they really are an important target for the BDS movement. Construction companies are also an important target. Construction companies who build the wall, build the checkpoints, build roadblocks, provide concrete, etc. I've mentioned two here. Cemex, own the Israeli company ReadyMix. ReadyMix have sites located in several Israeli settlement industrial zones. They also provide materials for the occupation, and they're a multinational global company. They're actually a Mexican company, Cemex, and they have offices all over the UK. So it's not an avenue which has been explored by the BDS movement, but I think it is one which should be. And the aim of that campaign really would be to get Cemex to divest from ReadyMix, the Israeli company. They're a huge multinational company. They don't need to have money invested, ownership of an Israeli company. We'll be running late.
Yeah, I guess it's like, you said, we've got some other companies, massive companies, and actually what they make from Israel is not that much compared to the whole economy. So, the bad press, that's kind of
it. Yeah. And again, that also holds true for franchises. Again, that's not an option that's really been explored. Blockbuster Video, Pizza Hut, Lee Cooper have franchises which work in the settlements, and that's simply giving a license to a company to operate under a brand name. The company itself what they're getting out of it is one, the brand recognition, their brand name is being seen in another part of the world. They're getting the money from the license. But for a company like Pizza Hut or Blockbuster Video, the effect of a massive BDS campaign on their brand really could be very negative. So again, I think those are real avenues which the BDS movement hasn't explored.